talk about tech, baby.
I love that. Let's talk about tech, baby. Love it. Absolutely. Thank you for that. Big news in the tech world. Apple has just unveiled its first major new product in almost a decade. It's a so-called augmented reality headset. It lets users merge the real world and the virtual world, so you can see things like video calls and internet searches superimposed on the space around you. I was trying to think of an example of what that might be like in film, and I immediately thought of Minority Report. Right? Because, you know, it's all like in front of you. So a bit like that, I suppose. We're going to ask somebody who knows a little bit more about these things in a second. The device will be available next year. It won't be cheap. The price tag is nearly £3,000. Whoa, blimey. Joining me now to tell me more is our resident tech expert, editor of GadgetDetective.com and host of Gadget Detective Podcast, Fevzi Turklap. Fevzi, welcome to the programme. Except maybe you should welcome me here because you're here more often than I am.
No. I followed you for a long time.
Oh, well, Fevzi, what
BBC Essex?
Fevzi, yes. Let's not talk about other stations. That. There are other stations available, but this is the one everyone's tuned into.
They are our kith and kin.
Absolutely. Kith and kin, exactly. Fevzi, this is exciting news for someone like yourself, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you've got the right word, exciting, because I have to sit through these things from Apple and the like, you know, for my job. And I haven't been excited about, I mean, Apple, you know, good solid upgrades year by year, but this is a new category. It's the first new category of product since the Apple Watch. And it kind of reminded me of the launch of the importance of it, of the iPhone. And I think it is going
to
be...
That's a significant thing to say, because iPhones, I don't know how many... I mean, in some countries, iPhones dominate, in some it's 50-50, but there are millions of people with those bits of kit in their hands or their pockets or their purses. So yeah, that's a big thing to say.
Well, and I think the way this technology is going, just as the iPhone killed off the iPod because it did everything iPod did,
dead.
I think that this technology, yes, it has to get cheaper and lighter and all the rest of it, but it is a signpost to the replacement for the smartphone. It has all the gubbins of not only a smartphone, but a full-blown computer. It's got an M2 processor, which is inside their laptops and desktop computers. So you can think of it as a replacement for your large-screen television, as many of them as you can fit in a field of view. Turn left, one big TV, turn right, another one.
Wow.
So you can do that. You can have your surround sound system, replaces a powerful laptop, replaces a games console. And I guess the way I think of it is this. At the moment, the internet is something that we peer at through small pieces of glass on our smartphones and tablets, typically speaking. And we're kind of voyeurs. We're peeking into that world. Now, with this technology, we get to step through the glass and into the world, and it surrounds us. Just as the real world surrounds us, this will surround us. And it's augmented reality because it doesn't completely, or it doesn't have to completely replace everything in your room where you're sitting, but it allows you to place virtual objects there. So TV sets, computer monitors, your emails, any app. And it's so cool the way it does it, you know. So imagine at the moment on a smartphone, you have to tap the app that you want to open. You look at the app, the icon of the app that you want to open. It knows that you're looking at it because it pops out. And then you just close your finger and thumb, and it selects it and it opens. And unlike other headsets in the past that have required big handheld controllers, which are a bit clunky, this thing tracks your eye movements, allows you to make very subtle movements in your hands. So you don't have to hold your arms up in front and, you know, do that. You can have them on your lap, on your knee, and just do subtle movements. And of course, voice input as well. And in that way, you have this completely immersive, much more natural experience. It's got a way to go. And by the way, bad news is it's not going to be under £3,000. $3,500 US, when they quote prices in the States, it's before tax.
Oh, so, I forgot about sales tax.
So when you add on 20% VAT, you're looking at £3,500 sterling at the moment.
Ouch! Who's got that to drop on anything? But you know, there's a few things I've got to check in with you about, because you've just described a beautiful tech utopian future where I no longer have, even in theory, from what you've just said, I no longer in theory need to have a screen in the corner of the room, right? I can have just a headset on. Except a headset's quite a solo activity. Where we watch movies together, we can all watch it together. If I'm wearing an Apple Vision Pro, I'm on my own, aren't I?
Yeah, so what you have to get to is a point where the technology is both affordable and ubiquitous in the same way that everyone's got a smartphone now. And by the way, some people are blowing £1,000 plus on smartphones as well. So let's not forget that if the technology is useful enough, and the smartphone is like a Swiss Army knife of technology, it does everything. And in the same way, this will do everything and it will get cheaper. And it was, if everyone has got the headset, then not only can you sit in a room together and watch the same film, you can be on the other sides of the world, watch the same film and virtually share the popcorn. I mean, you have the sense of being with that person, which is quite kind of nice.
Isn't it interesting? So I do these things when I'm elsewhere doing other things, Versi, and I think about what it is to the screen. It can be something that brings you together, but also it can be a barrier to human contact, can't it?
Yeah, it can.
So it's so fascinating, obviously, with your tech perspective, you're thinking, yeah, I can be together with somebody or I can feel together with somebody. But for me, I'm thinking that's just another barrier between people.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, bear in mind, I have no friends, so I have little to lose in this respect. But you know, it does depend. I mean, it's like, you know, the stereotype of the teenager sitting at the dinner table, if there is such a thing as a dinner table anymore, and sort of texting away and not being present in that space. But they're present in another space. That's the interesting thing about it. So I think I kind of trust Apple a little bit more than the others to get this right. And one example of that is on this headset, which looks like a pair of ski goggles, effectively. There are not only screens on the inside that you look at that give you sort of 3D stereoscopic vision. There's this outward-facing screen. Now, why would you want an outward-facing screen? What it does is when another person is in the room with you, it detects that they're in the room. It projects on the outer screen a picture of your gaze as it is then, your eyes and where you're looking.
Oh.
So that person, so it gives the impression that
they're looking at you.
Yeah, that it's kind of like it's a translucent visor, but actually it's really not, because you've got two little high definition.
That sounds really creepy, by the way.
Well, you know, it is quite interesting, because there is that thing inside, is it Zoom, one of the video platforms now, where, you know, when people are looking at the screen instead of the camera, and then there's this software trick that they do now where they make your eyes look like they're looking at the camera even when they're not.
Ew, that's so creepy, but also hilarious all at once, because everyone's looking at themselves going, oh, I really need to get some plastic surgery. Oh, no, maybe that's just me. Yeah. How fascinating. All of that is fascinating to me. I, of course, saw this launched. It's so far away from everyday use. It made me think of the big things that happened in my youth when computer games and gaming, home gaming was new.
Yeah.
Because I loved an arcade as a child on holiday. My goodness. Daily Thompson's Decathlon, best arcade game ever. And I'll fight you if you disagree, Fevzy. But the point is, I wanted to know about you and your first computing experiences. Were they at school? Were they at home? What did you use?
I was a bit all over the place. So the first home game I had was Pong. We bought it from, if I can say, Argos. I think it was like 50 quid at the time.
That's expensive.
Yeah, in the 70s. And it promptly broke and got sent back. So we didn't have that for very long. My first computer that I owned was a BBC Micro Model B 32K.
When I was first here, Fevzy, a very long time ago on this frequency, we used a BBC computer to tell presenters what was going on.
I know. I used to use them on another station as well. So, I mean, they were quite clever. And my favourite game on there was a game called Elite, which was the first time that on an 8-bit processor in the early 80s, you could get three-dimensional wireframe spacecraft, you know, rotating and in 3D space. That was incredible. Someone had done a really good job of programming that very precisely to do that job. But the first game I ever played was before there were home computers. Even the school didn't have a computer. And I schlepped over to the local polytechnic, who had an open day. And they had a game. And the computer console didn't have a screen. It was a teletype. You'd never guess I'm only 25, but it was a teletype.
Do you measure your at years in the same way Eddie does?
What, dog years?
That's amazing. Yeah, those. Anyway, carry on.
Well, the game was golf, And it, there was no graphics because there was no screen. It was a teletype, you know, like a roll
of
paper.
Yeah, like the Hobbit. So, played the Hobbit at school.
So you would say, what club do you want? And you'd choose a club. And then it'd say, how hard do you want to hit it? And you say it. And then it would type back, the ball is now 20 yards from...
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. You played golf with in a written golf. That's You could have literally just gone and played pitch and putt.
Yeah. I tell you what made me feel really old. I went to the Science Museum and I realised I own quite a lot of the tech they had on exhibit.
You've still got it. So don't tell me. Have you got an Atari tucked away at home?
No. I've still got the BBC Micro. I've got a very early classic synthesizer that they've got in there as well. And a Rally Chopper bicycle is in there as well.
No, come on. Devsy, don't say it. Don't promise. Get me a picture of that Rally Chopper, please. I absolutely need that nostalgia in my life. I'm going to quickly read you a couple of messages I got. Bob's texting. Hey, Bob. Bob says, back in the 80s, had Galaxy Invader 1000. Genius game. Thanks, Bob. And then lovely Frank at New Cross has come back again to say, I grew up in the 70s in Germany. My uncle had one of those tennis games. Is that Pong, isn't it? Pong. So we had Pong as well. Eventually, he gave it to my sister and me. Want to guess who got the most fun out of it? The cat. Henry was fascinated by the tiny flying ball on the telly box. Spent hours chasing it. Good point. I'm thinking Space Invaders, total classic. And we had a VIC-20 and it's the Ghostbusters game that I loved the most.
Yeah. You know what? I just to bring this right up to date with Pong, you know that Elon Musk got a company called Neuralink where they're experimenting with brain implants?
Yeah. So in theory, we don't need the upload. We don't need to put the goggles on. We'll just have it in our heads.
Well, the funny thing is that not funny for the monkey. They've inserted this device into the onto the brain of a macaque monkey who now plays Pong by thought. He's got a screen, but you can see the paddles, but he's controlling one of the paddles with his thoughts.
Didn't Elon read the story that I read on Twitter the other day, which is 2 years till AI is going to come and get us?
The thing about Elon Musk's, how can I put it? He's not always accurate with his timings.
Got it.
But the general thrust of it is correct. We need to... you know what it is? There's these new technologies being released to the public without any safety checks. If that was a drug, you know, it would have to go through all sorts of safety checks and approvals. And yet all these tech companies, OpenAI was a company that was meant to be like the canary in the coal mine. It was meant to be the one that warned us when AI was getting dangerous. And what happened was they took $10 billion from Microsoft and sold their... Well, I won't say it.
Well, thank you for not saying it. But see, really quickly, one observation I read on Twitter, a piece of technology that really tickled me was saying, hang on a second, who knew they were going to make the AI to do the creative stuff? We all thought they'd make the AI to do the boring stuff so we could do the creative stuff.
Yeah, there was an AI a human that won a photography competition, quite a high profile one a couple of months ago. And then the winner divulged that the photo wasn't in fact a photo at all. It was a creation of an artificial intelligence tool. And they quickly took the prize off him. But it strikes me that not only will artists and creatives be using this technology, and those of us that aren't creative also using it, but that before too long, the AI will be its own artist. It will be an entity, and it, you know, you'll ask it, what are you? And it will say, I'm a painter, or I'm a sculptor, or whatever it is. And it will be an artist. And we'll have to change the rules, because at the moment, they're property, and property can't own property. So, there's been several inventions by AIs, but when they've tried to patent them in the name of the AI, they can't, because they say it's a computer program, it can't own stuff. So these are interesting days.
Oh, it really is. I think Eddie's going to need to talk to you a great deal more to find out what on earth's going on with it all. But thank you for the moment. Really appreciate it. A quick question. Will you be throwing down 3.5 for a Vision Pro?
No, I'm going to wait for the second or third generation.
I like the idea of you just blowing the dust off the BBC Microsoft computer and tapping away with those chunky buttons.
Still working.
Listen.
32K. The computer on my desk has literally 1 million times more memory. It has 32 gigabytes of RAM instead of 32 kilobytes. Aww. 1 million times in a generation.
I would pay good money to have a little go on the, on that BBC computer of yours, okay, with the big chunky buttons. Thank you ever so much. Clack, 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 clack. Such a satisfying thing to type on. Thank you, Fevzy. It's an utter pleasure. Quick reminder if people want to follow you in a non-weird way.
Oh, well, that would be nice. Makes a change. Twitter. Twitter would be good. At Gadget Detective. Come say hello.
Yes, and of course there's the
Did I mention I don't have any friends?
You did, okay. And I'm going to encourage everyone warmly to go and say hello, because, you know, it's the least I can do. Thank you so much. You'll have virtual friends in other countries that you've never met. Thanks, Fevzy. Mwah. What a voice. Fevzy Turk out there from Gadget Detective and the Gadget Detective podcast.